This episode of Disrupt is sponsored by Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. Welcome to episode 4 of Disrupt. Editor Tim Mullaney is currently on vacation, but before he left, he sat down to talk with Interim Healthcare President and CEO, Lawrence Kraska. They talked about Kraska's first years in the healthcare industry, ongoing struggles such as staffing, technology, and Kraska's love of endurance sports.
Larry, welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you here, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you today. To start, just want to really turn the clock back to sort of get a sense of your background and what makes you tick as a leader. So want to turn the clock all the way back to your college years. Where did you go to college?
Yeah, great question, Tim. And thanks for taking the time today for the call. And looking forward to talking through my background, a little bit about the industry. So I spent a large part of my life in Atlanta, and went to both undergraduate and graduate school at Kennesaw State University, which is a school north of Atlanta. And undergrad had a background both in psychology as well as business. And one of the best things of my college years is I actually had an opportunity to run cross country and track for the school. And that intercollegiate experience was great. Really enjoyed that, and decided to continue on and get my MBA from Kennesaw State as well. So I have an MBA with concentration in finance, and that's just a little bit about my college background. The only other thing I'll add is I actually have remained active with the university, and I sit on the board of trustees for the school now, so I'm still actively involved with the school.
Great. Can you talk to me a little bit about that decision to study both psychology and business? I assume there's some benefits maybe to having insight into psychology in the business world.
Yeah, so like many of the folks probably listening, when I entered college, I had no idea exactly what I wanted to do with my career, and had a desire to possibly go into either the medical route, medical school, or possibly counseling or something more, you know, working with people. And about halfway through undergrad, became very attracted to the whole business side of of my career, and wanted to really move out into more the business side of healthcare. And as I was finishing up undergrad, my decision at that point was I wanted to get my MBA and go into healthcare administration, which was the first part of my career. So I made as I got further along in undergraduate, I decided I wanted to be in healthcare, but I wanted to be in the business side of healthcare, which really drew me into hospital administration. And as I was finishing up grad school and getting out for my first real career job, I was hired by the time it was National Medical Enterprises, which of course now is Tenet, and entered into their administrator training program. So that was that was actually my first career job in healthcare in the beginning of my career.
Had you going into undergrad, it sounds like you already had some idea that healthcare might be in the cards for you. Did you have some sort of exposure to the healthcare system as a kid through your family, or was that just something you were drawn to sort of naturally?
I think it was a combination of people that I knew, friends of the family that were either physicians or worked in healthcare in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, I think, had to do with just as I got into school and started looking at different, different majors and different areas to go into. I've always enjoyed numbers and math, and but I had a desire on the counseling side. I was thinking maybe with the psych background and all that. There was, there's a lot of areas of psychology that focus on industrial, organizational, right, performance, counseling, that kind of thing. And as I got more into that, I really got drawn more into the business side of it. But I think, that's accurate. I knew from back then that healthcare was going to be something I really wanted to move into. And if you look at my career, the entire time I've been working, I've been every position I've held and every company I've been with has been a healthcare company. So that's been really the focus of my career, is to stay in healthcare.
Let's talk about those early years after grad school. Was that job with Tenet the very first one you had after your MBA?
Yeah, I did some internship type work right out of undergrad into graduate school. But once I was well into my studies, and I got hired by National Medical. You had asked, previously about mentors, and I was fortunate because I came into that organization at a time where there was a really great executive in the Atlanta market, and I was young. I was in my early 20s, just getting out of grad school, and the name of the guy was Brent Bryson. Really great guy. And he gave me an opportunity to come on board and really learn the different departments of the hospital and really go through a training program of what it was going to take to become a hospital administrator. The one thing that, as a mentor, Brent did that I've never forgotten in my career is I figured I'd come out of grad school and go right into the finance or accounting area or get into, program management. My first boss in a hospital is actually a nurse. And he felt that the way to really learn how a hospital operates and how healthcare works is you really got to learn what's the most important thing about a hospital is taking care of patients. So I learned from the beginning it wasn't about financial statements and about, having the best equipment. It's really about having the best clinical staff working for you. And that was my very first job out of grad school. And throughout my career, everywhere that I've gone, whether it's been hospital administration, managing, national medical groups, working in staffing, managing outpatient clinics. The key thing that I've always tried to go back to is if you're in healthcare, it's great to have the best equipment, the newest lasers, the best building, but if you don't have the best doctors and nurses and best medical staff, you're not going to have the best overall facility to treat patients. And I think that's very true in home care. And one of the many things that attracted me to interim is, I think the key in the business is you want to have great caregivers and great nurses taking care of people's family members. Otherwise, you can have, the best branding and the best name, and it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's about the people that are taking care of the patients. And I learned that in my very first job right out of school, how important that was.
And what was your job title that first job where you were training under the nurse to begin with?
It's funny. So my very first role was Assistant Director of Quality Assurance and Utilization Management. So I didn't have a clinical background, but I was working in a department with other clinicians. And basically, QA and UM is what it was called at the time. So I dealt with things like getting the hospital ready for survey with the Joint Commission, working with, it was sort of a hybrid between the clinical department and the billing department in terms of making sure that the bill. But I worked every day with doctors and nurses throughout the facility. So I got a real feel for, how it worked. And then, later on, as I worked in that setting, I moved to different departments and learned other areas of the hospital. But the very first place I worked was really in a working, day in and day out with clinicians. When I left, I didn't really leave Tenet, but when I left the hospital setting, I actually had an opportunity to be promoted into a role working with a multi-specialty group after that was connected with the hospitals that I worked with. And the reason that happened was as I was working through my training as an administrator, a lot of the work that I did ended up in areas of trying to recruit medical staff to the hospital. Because again, the vision of the folks that I worked with was, if you have the best doctors and the best nurses, you'll have the best facility. So as I worked early in my career in recruiting on the physician side, it gravitated towards my first opportunity to work with a large medical group practice. So for the first 7 years or so of my career, I worked with those hospitals and the medical groups in that area. And the real key to our growth and our success was recruiting and retaining the best doctors and the best medical staff that we could find in the market.
Great. Yeah. So I guess if you can just take me through the sort of career trajectory. You started off in that role working a little bit more on the clinical side, and I know you ended up working for club staffing. So I guess, can you walk us through the steps to get you there?
Yeah. So, when you talk to folks in home care, I've got a, obviously a different background. There's peers that I have in this business that have extensive, really deep experience in home care that have been doing it for many, many more years than me. My experience is a little bit different. At a number of the companies I've worked with, both the staffing business as well as some of the hospitals, we either staffed home care professionals or some of these places that I worked, we actually had home care as part of our service line. But the thing that might be a little bit different about my background is I've got sort of a broad background across a bunch of different areas of healthcare. I started out the first part of my career working in the hospitals, and then I moved from there into working for a company. Actually, it was a large medical group in terms of the specialty, but it was small, you know, in terms of other big multi-specialty groups. And it was a group called Atlanta Ear, Nose, and Throat Associates. And that's really the next mentor that I had. Is I left hospital and group practice administration that was hospital-based and went to work with a physician by the name of Ramey Tritt, just a phenomenal physician, but also great executive. And he had a vision for creating a group of doctors in the Atlanta market where if you had a problem related to ENT, whether you needed your tonsils taken out, you needed sinus surgery, you had head and neck cancer, that if you lived anywhere around Atlanta, his group was the group you'd go to see. And over the first few years I was with Ramey, I was with him for a total of 7 years. The first few years I worked with him to really, you know, help him execute his vision of becoming, you know, the key ear, nose, and throat group in the Atlanta market. And at that time, we became one of the top five in the country, private, not university-based, but on a private side. So we were one of the biggest ENT groups in the country. And it's kind of a longer story, but at that time, there were a lot of groups merging together and forming management companies. So I had an opportunity to work with Dr. Tritt, as well as a guy by the name of Jerry Benjamin, another of my mentors. And a company was formed by the name of Physician Specialty Corp. And we took the company public. I was the COO for the company. And we basically went around the country and we helped ENT and allergy practices in different parts of the country merge together to create really super groups so that in their markets, you could basically have any of your needs met by coming to one of these group practices. And in that model, much like what I said earlier when I worked on the hospital side, the key to that business was recruiting and finding really the key group where you had the best physicians in that market and then building around them. So that was a really neat part of my career because I had an opportunity to be in the public market for a while, but also to go from the Atlanta market into a bunch of other cities, South Florida, New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Illinois, a number of places around the country and really help them, you know, expand these physician practices. Really enjoyed that. So Jerry and Jerry Benjamin and Dr. Tritt were great mentors and really gave me an opportunity to, you know, to learn a whole new area of healthcare in terms of trying to expand and trying to get, you know, really known as a key brand nationally in that area. I was, after that 7 year period, I did a brief stint in consulting, and then I was recruited again by a group of private equity investors, and Jerry Benjamin was one of them, to come down to Boca. There was a small, I wouldn't say it was super small, but there was a relatively small travel staffing company down in Boca that staffed radiology departments in hospitals. The name of the company was Club Staffing. And the vision of the investors was to come in and get behind the founders of this company and really help grow it. Because as many of us know on the call, we work really hard in our businesses, but we can't always find enough talent to, you know, meet the needs of the demand, whether it's nursing, home care, physicians, and locums. So I left what I was doing, moved down to Boca and joined Club Staffing. And the next 9 years that I was with that company, although I had been involved in recruiting and building medical staffs and learned the key, you know, the key importance of retention, I really learned a tremendous amount about recruiting the first couple of years that I was in a staffing business, because staffing companies are the places we all call when we're desperate and we can't find anybody. So if you're running a staffing business, you've got to be able to do it better, quicker, faster than your competitors, but obviously you got to be able to do it better than your clients because they're hiring you because they can't do it. So in the time that I was with Club Staffing, we built that company. You know, we went from, I think it was seven or eight recruiters when I started to the time I left 9 years later, I think we had over 70 recruiters working for us, some of them, many of them in Boca, but they were placed really in a number of offices around the country. And we became one of the top one or two companies in the country at placing allied staff for hospitals, clinics, and home health companies. So the vision was basically Club Staffing would staff anybody in a hospital or a clinical setting that took care of patients that wasn't a doctor or a nurse. So we didn't do nurse staffing and we didn't do locums, but we did everything else. And we went from a radiology company when I joined in 2001. We did a little bit in respiratory and a couple other areas. The team really helped grow that company to where we became, you know, one of the top couple of companies in the country placing allied professionals. So it was physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, respiratory, pharmacy, laboratory, radiology, all those different specialties. And in that type of setting, it was great training for me because I learned the importance of identifying candidates, matching them to the position, getting them hired, you know, to work for us at the client, and then really focusing on retaining them. And kind of one of our critical success factors was, although we were a staffing company, we had people who worked for club staffing for 2, 3, sometimes 5 years. So it wasn't a temp job. They really viewed it as a career. So the key importance of not just recruiting, but really retention was I think, one of the most critical things that we did really well that helped us grow.
Right. So I want to eventually sort of circle back around and connect what you were doing at Club Staffing with some of what's going on at Interim and in home care right now. But maybe just to keep on your own personal sort of journey right now, can you describe then how you went from that club staffing to ending up eventually taking the helm at Interim?
Absolutely. So again, the time with club staffing was great. I think that was a very important foundational time in my career because I worked with really great people who taught me so much about how to recruit, how to retain, how to create a competitive advantage with your workforce as opposed to just the brand or equipment or whatever else you're providing in healthcare. It really was about the people you had working for you. I left there and I had an opportunity to work for a couple of years for Jackson Healthcare up in Atlanta, directly with the chairman of the company, and helped look at launching a few new companies, including telemedicine, teleradiology, and a few other business lines. And then I was recruited again by a private equity firm to go back up to Kentucky and work with an emergency medicine group up in Kentucky. And these physicians basically manage the emergency rooms for the hospitals in that market. And I worked together with the investors and the founding physicians to take that business and grow it into the number one provider of emergency medicine in the Kentucky market. And we expanded into West Virginia, Indiana, and Ohio during the time that I was there. And the key in that whole strategy was very similar to what I had learned in my last couple of jobs, is if we want to be a company that's growing and that's provides really great quality, we got to figure out where we're going to be number one. And in that particular business, rather than expanding into 20 states, we said, you know what, we want to be the employer choice for physicians in our market. So our goal was really to attract the emergency room physicians for the state of Kentucky. And if they were going to work in that state, they were going to work for our group. And then again, that became the same strategy in these other states that we moved into. So once again, many of the things that I learned in the staffing company, we applied those same principles over to Mesa Medical Group. After Mesa was bought by a larger competitor, I moved down to another company down in South Florida called Hospital Physician Partners. Very similar strategy, over 350 ERs in over, I think we were in about 30 states at our max, and about 1,800 full-time physicians. We had several thousand part-time doctors working for us. But again, the same strategy. If we recruit and retain the best doctors, we'll have the ability to grow faster than our competition. In many of those jobs that I just shared with you, the common theme was they were all about executing on trying to get the best clinical staff to work for us and become the industry leader in a particular area of the market. And the other common theme was these were all investor-backed companies where the investors wanted to bring me in to try to help get the company to the next level. Mm-hmm. So after leaving HPP, I was recruited by the board to come over to Interim Healthcare and Caring Brands. And I think that although I don't have an extensive home care background, I think that we all felt that it would be a very good fit because I really believe, and I've said this, many times in different interviews, I talk to the team about it every day. You have to, in this business, everyone's talking about the importance of quality, being able to demonstrate better outcomes, and being able to figure out how to provide home care efficiently and with great quality and great outcomes. And I really believe in these type of businesses, whether it's home care, running an ER, running a staffing company, it all starts with recruiting and retaining the best clinicians that you possibly can, the best caregivers that you can. If you have great staff working for you and they're clinically very committed to what they're doing, that will drive great quality, and the quality will drive great outcomes. So that's been a big part of our vision here, and where I'm working with the team is, we know that one of the biggest challenges in home care is the workforce shortage. You can't find enough people. We're competing with retail. We're competing with all sorts of other industries for part of our workforce, but then on the nursing side, we're competing for great nurses with hospitals and with skilled nursing facilities, assisted living facilities. So it's a very, very competitive time in our industry, and we think that if you don't execute on the recruiting, onboarding, and retention piece of the business, everything else you're doing is going to be affected. So, you know, I'm a believer that I think that some of the background that I've had in staffing and in other areas of healthcare where they've already, you know, they've been dealing with this issue probably longer, I think that that's been a big help as I've come on board here to try to drive the company to the next level.
Right. What year was that you joined interim?
I've been on board for about a year and a half now. So I'm still relatively new. The company, it's a great company. I mean, I was attracted to interim for a number of reasons, but the business is 52 years old. It was founded back in the 60s and has evolved over time. But I know when I was in the staffing business at Club Staffing, interim was one of our customers. We staffed the home care offices in a number of the markets. I was familiar with the company. I knew the retiring CEO from my time at Club Staffing as well. And the brand has been around a long time, and it has a very good reputation in the industry. So that was one of, you know, several things that attracted me to interim.
Great. So I guess it's already come up a number of times how some of your expertise is on that staffing side, on recruitment and retention of talent. So I know you've got some workforce initiatives in the works already at interim. Can you describe what's going on in terms of those initiatives that you started in the last year and change that you've been leading the company?
Yeah, sure. So I'm happy to talk about that at kind of a high level. The way we view it here, and I think that this isn't anything new. There are other executives that are probably talking about the same exact topic. We put our own little approach on it that might be a little bit different. But when I've traveled around in other companies, even in the ER business, I saw this. But here, when I came to interim and I went out and met with our owners, I heard in my first 90 days with the company, everyone talked about the challenge of being able to recruit enough people. And as you really dig into people's businesses, because we're a franchise model, so as the franchisor, our job is to really support our owners. And we've got great owners across the country, you know, providing care in their markets. But our job is to really try to dig in and figure out what the true issue is. And as you talk to, folks across our industry, even our competitors, everyone's talking about recruiting. Recruiting is only a part of the issue. We believe here that there's really three areas we need to focus on. Recruiting is, of course, attracting people that want to be, you know, that want to work for interim and want to be in the industry. The second piece is the onboarding piece, so that as we're bringing them into the company, we're really helping them understand why this is a great place to work. And then the third piece is retention. And, again, I think a lot of the executives, a lot of my colleagues that I talk to and peers that I have, they get the recruiting and retention piece. But when you talk to folks at the desk level that are dealing with it every day, they view the problem, you know, oftentimes as being a recruiting issue and don't always remember that the retention piece is so important. Because if you hire 500 people and a year later, you only have 450 of them, you only have 50 of those 500 still working for you, and 450 of them have left to go to retail, go to a competitor, it's a revolving door. So we put time and energy into each of those three categories. We have very specific initiatives around recruiting so that we can become identified as a place you want to work if you want to be in the home care industry. The onboarding we view as equally important, because once they're identified, we want to make sure when they join the company that they really understand the culture and the history of interim, and that they're really attracted to our company and what makes our brand so strong with the care that we provide. And then that, we think, leads to better retention. We track retention very carefully.
Great. I'm curious about that onboarding piece, because I think that, you know, we hear a lot about the need and challenges around recruitment and the high levels of turnover. But it's interesting that you place such a high emphasis on the onboarding process specifically. So I guess it seems logical that's like a crucial part of sort of winning over and engaging workers. But I guess, do you think that onboarding is sort of overlooked in the industry writ large? And are there any, you know, one or two sort of best practices that you really are drilling at interim?
Yeah, and I would hate to speak on behalf of the industry and the competitors. So I'm sure that, you know, my colleagues are looking at it very, very much like we do. But I'll give you my opinion from just looking across multiple areas of healthcare. When you look at the nursing shortage and the physician shortage, there's many companies across the country that hire permanent placement firms to go find a surgeon or go find a cardiologist, orthopedic surgeon to come to their hospital. They spend large amounts of money to do perm placement with these doctors and put a lot of attention into the recruiting piece. Then the doctor joins the medical staff, comes on board, and then they just blend in with the medical staff. Same thing with I've seen in across the country with nurses in some cases, where hospitals will compete very hard to get a nurse, offer them a sign-on bonus, bring them on board. Within a matter of months, they're just blended into the schedule and working shifts like everybody else. When you look at the businesses that I've been in, I've worked with teams, and we're doing the same thing here at Interim, is we want to really attract the best talent that we possibly can, and we want to be competitive in every way to get people interested in the company. Once they join, that's not the end of it. We don't want to get them through orientation and put them out in the field to work on a shift. We really believe that there is a very big difference between onboarding and orientation. Orientation is part of onboarding, but it's not the whole thing. Onboarding is showing the workforce that's coming into your company why we really believe that what they do is it makes a major difference. It's they're the ones that are out taking care of patients every day. They're the ones that are really delivering the care. They're the brand. They're the brand in the market. So that first period that they're with the company, it's creating almost a VIP experience for why we really value them and why they're so important, rather than get them through orientation and get them out to start working and taking care of patients. And there are many, many hospitals and many physician groups across the country that do this very, very well. So I'm not trying to say this is a across the board problem in the industry, but that's one of the challenges. That there are hospitals, and I'm sure there are home care companies, and there are definitely large physician groups where the emphasis is placed on recruiting and the onboarding doesn't get the attention that I think it needs. And that is a big focus of ours. And then on the retention side, we believe that great recruiting and great onboarding leads to better retention. But, we work with our owners to try to find ways for them to recognize people that have been with them for a long period of time. Because I learned in the staffing industry, employers are always looking at why people leave. Did they leave for more money? Did they leave because they weren't happy with their boss? I learned in the staffing business, though, that another way to look at it is you also need to look at why people stay. You have people that are your best employees, people that have been with you for multiple years. And rather than trying to make that group unhappy who left for a dollar more an hour to go somewhere else, you need to really make sure you're putting your attention and really taking care of the people who have been with you, and learn about what you're doing well with those people so you can do more of that in your training and make sure that your staff are offering, more appreciation for the folks that have been with you for a while. So that's a key approach that we have here, is we're always looking at what do we do well and what are the things that we do that make people want to stay with us. We still look at why people leave as well, but that's not the key focus. It's more about why people stay.
What do you hear about why people are staying with Interim?
I think as you talk to owners across the country, there's different examples, but I believe that we have, this is another thing that attracted me to Interim. The fact that we've been, in business for over 50 years, we have offices that have been in the community, where they're located for 20, 30 years. They're on second generation, in some cases, third generation owners, where the children of the founders of the organization are now running the business. And those children that are now the executives are training their children to take over when they retire. And that creates a tremendous amount of pride in their business. Our owners are owner-operators in their market, and they live and work in the community, where they're providing the care. And that is such an important part when somebody comes on board, that they really get the feeling of being a part of an organization where the owners are really very invested in the business, and the business is all about the caregivers that work with them. I was in an office a couple weeks ago and visiting with an owner, and I walked into a training room, and the entire wall of the training room was full of thank you notes and letters from families of all the different people that different lives they've touched, or where they've helped a grandparent or a parent. Some of them were directly from the clients and the patients. Mm-hmm. But imagine joining a company, walking in, and the first thing you see is all these examples of where, the work that they do every day makes a difference in the community that they are. And that's just a small example of the pride that the owners take in the work that they're doing. And I think that's a big part of when somebody walks onto the job and joins the organization. It gets you really connected to that office.
Sure. Are there systems in place, I guess, given that it's on the franchise model, and that I assume that there are sort of some all-star owners who really are doing hitting out of the park with recruitment and retention? Are there ways to see what they're doing at that local level and then take those best practices and sort of disseminate them?
Yeah, so I'm fortunate. One of the things that that I'm proudest of in my role as a CEO of Interim is I'm surrounded by just an excellent executive team. We have a person who is in charge of our recruiting, onboarding, and retention training, who actually has developed all sorts of training tools, webinars, has a major presence at all of our national meetings, talking about all three of those categories: recruiting, onboarding, and retention. So it's a combination of tools, but it's also a ton of ongoing training, because any company, as they evolve, you're constantly hiring people. In some cases, you have turnover. So mm-hmm. It's not a one-and-done approach. This is a big, big part of our strategy as a company, is working with our owners and trying to identify people that are doing it great and new techniques that they're using to attract talent, and sharing those examples with our other owners. And then, again, our recruiting team, led by the executive, who's over that, making sure that these things are translated into tools and webinars and talks at our conference meetings. In addition to that, much like all the folks in our industry and many of my competitors, we are always working on updating our technology so that we have better systems for the owners to use and better databases for them to be able to utilize to track their recruiting. You can have really great people and they can be trained really well, but in today's environment, you got to have the technology to be able to reach the employees, the potential employees. So that technology piece is a big focus of ours as well.
That makes sense. And I think it gets back at something you were saying about the Interim is a long-standing company. I think that legacy is an advantage in some ways. But then I also wonder, when you have sort of generations of owners who are maybe comfortable and good at providing care under a certain model, are they under strain given all the changes that are happening in healthcare right now, technology being one, but also sort of larger changes in the healthcare system, now changes with you coming in as the new CEO just at Interim? Is sort of change management a part of your leadership role, and how are you approaching that?
Yeah, so that's actually a great question as well. I think any sector of healthcare you're in, again, I'm relatively new to home care, although I've done it in other companies, but I've been in healthcare for over 30 years, been in home care specifically for a year and a half. Every segment of healthcare that I've worked in, if you're not able to adapt to a changing environment, you just can't forget about being successful. It's almost impossible to survive, whether it's the technology around the way care is given, if it's around advancements in medication, where the setting where care takes place. There are so many changes that happen, and it used to be in 5-year increments when I look back on it, but it's like every year there are changes in technology and the way care is delivered, but also in reimbursement and in the regulatory environment. So regardless of if I was in the seat or not, I think anybody who is in home care, anybody who leads a home care company, has to be able to evolve with the industry, because I think that all these changes that are taking place, I don't think we're going through a period where, hey, we had a lot of changes in 17 and there's changes happening in 18, but then it's going to kind of slow down and we're not going to have to worry about it. It's going to be an evolving process, I think, in the industry. And the best example that I like to use is when I got into healthcare back in the late 80s, I remember back then, you would go into the hospital, you'd have an operation, you probably would be in the hospital for a few days, you get discharged to home. Within a few years, the pattern became, you don't go to a hospital anymore, you go to an outpatient surgery center for a lot of those cases, and you go home the same day. And back in the late 80s, early 90s, when people were older and they got ill and they became more chronically ill, they'd be transferred from the hospital to a nursing home, skilled nursing facility. Eventually, the concept of ILFs and ALFs came into play. But back then it was kind of, you got older, you got more chronically ill, and you ended up in a nursing home. Fast forward to today, people want to age at home. They want to stay at home as long as they can and avoid going to the hospital in the first place. But when they do become chronically ill, their goal is to be able to go back home and spend as much time as they can at home. There's obviously a great role for independent living, assisted living, and skilled nursing in our industry. It has obviously a very, very important place in the in the continuum, but many people would prefer to be at home as long as they can. And that's a change that is very different, you know, than it was 20 years ago. You know, that's the example I like to use with our team about how things are evolving. It's the whole concept of aging in place and people wanting to stay at home, you know, as long as they can, together with all the challenges we're having with the aging population, people living longer. That's created much more demand for what we do. So if you're not really wired to deal with thinking a year or two ahead of where the market's going to be and adapting to change, you're going to get behind. That's just, again, that's just my opinion.
So I guess on that note, looking ahead, how do you sort of have your eye on the ball? Do you think that we're going to continue to see a drive to send patients into the home setting quicker out of the hospital? Are you anticipating maybe a higher acuity patient?
Yeah, so it's, again, I think everybody in the industry, all my colleagues are looking at the trends just like we are. And it's clear that the biggest macro drivers are this term, I've read it a couple times now, the silver tsunami. Everybody is talking about the fact that more and more people, the boomers and everything, there's more people entering that 65 and 70 and 75 and older category. So you got more people aging, but at the same time, people are living longer. So you've got a compounding effect around the demand for home care services. And I do believe that there's a lot of data and evidence out there that the preferences for many people, they want to age at home. So you have more and more people getting older, living longer, that need to age at home. That's a macro driver that no one would argue. The second trend, though, is along with that, that creates a real supply-demand challenge from the care side. So I think, again, a critical success factor for all of us is going to be around recruiting and retention. I hate to keep going back to that, but you can tell I'm pretty passionate about that. But I do believe in our business, that's critical. Along with that supply-demand challenge, you know, another area that we're looking at is how does technology fit into that? Because, you know, you can't replace a person going out and providing hands-on care, but there are ways to supplement that through technology to help offset the challenges of being able to find people. So, you know, just like many companies in our space, that's something that we're looking at is how do technology companies, whether it's telemedicine, telemonitoring, how do they incorporate into the work that we're doing to provide the best possible care for the folks that are out there? So you got the macro driver, you got the supply demand challenges, and then of course everyone, you know, is carefully watching reimbursement and you know, regulatory changes, and that's something that throughout healthcare, whether you're running a hospital, running a physician group, or you're in post acute like we are, you got to keep an eye on that because that's sort of a, you know, that's an evolving process too. Can I predict where that's going to be 2 to 5 years from now? I don't, you know, again, I think there's very few people in our industry that would be able to, you know, clearly point to that direction. I will tell you, I do believe that the winners, you know, in terms of being the providers of choice are going to be the ones that can really demonstrate great quality, great outcomes. And a lot of that, I do believe, again, is driven off of you got to have great nurses and great caregivers to be able to demonstrate that you're providing, you know, great quality and great outcomes. So that's, yeah, that's kind of the way we view it.
Seems like also part of it is being able to address the pain points of other providers in the continuum as reimbursement models are sort of incentivizing. I was going to say forcing. I'll say incentivizing everyone to play in the sandbox together, maybe in a better way. Do you think that having your background, having been in hospitals with physician groups on the staffing side, this sort of gives you a sort of bird's eye view of the system as a whole and helps you understand what some of these other types of providers are facing and how Interim can help them with that and be a resource and drive some referrals?
Yeah, as I said earlier, I'm fortunate because I'm surrounded by, here at our national headquarters, I'm surrounded by a group of executives that have very deep experience in their subject, you know, area. And many of them have been in home care their whole career. So I'm lucky because I have a lot of people around me doing this a long time. But more importantly, we have owners, as I mentioned, that have been doing this for decades. So I think we've got great experience and great expertise in the home care industry. And we have people that are really, really passionate and do this really well. And I learn from them every day. I think I bring some other experience and ideas from other parts of healthcare that I think are very relevant around recruiting, retention, you know, determining quality, process improvement, some of the other things that I've done at other companies. So it's kind of a blend of both. Is I think I'm bringing some, you know, some different ways of looking at it to the business, but it's complementing, you know, the great experience that we already have here. Because again, that one thing that is, I think, consistent across all these different segments of healthcare that I've worked is around the clinicians are the ones that are actually out there providing the care, and they're the business. We're a service business. We don't manufacture medical equipment. We don't have hospital buildings. I mean, our owners are home care providers in their market, and that's all about the people they have working for them. So I think that combination of our, you know, our experience here on the team level at the headquarters, as well as our owners' deep experience, together with some of the things that I'm bringing to the company, I think it's a great combination.
You know, you talked about the growing demand for aging in place and how the silver tsunami is coming, and there's going to be this big population of people who want to age at home. And I guess related to this reimbursement question is just the affordability question, because people want to age at home, but that's expensive right now. So I guess I'm wondering if you are seeing that as a pressure point as well, and if there are things that you're thinking about that you can do as a company to broaden the consumer base that can maybe afford the kinds of personal care services that they'll need to age in place.
Yeah, sure. That's another very good question. And the one thing I want to point out that I think is another strength of Interim is I was attracted to the company because of the brand and the reputation, the number of years they were in business. But another big positive for me was the fact that we're one of the few companies out there that actually provides the full continuum. So we do that, you know, people refer to it as private duty or what we call personal care and support, which is more of the sometimes directly paid by families, other times by insurance. We provide that level of care, but we also provide skilled care, which is more of the, you know, traditional skilled home care. And then we have a number of our offices. We have a total of right now over almost 40 locations that provide hospice services. So we have really what we consider to be the whole continuum, whether you need some help with daily living type issues, or you need more skilled care, or you get to the point in life where you need palliative or hospice care, we provide all of that. I think on the earlier part of your question, though, you know, our goal would be, again, to try to make our services affordable so that, you know, people are able to utilize the services. But I think when you look at home care in general, and I'm sure you'd hear this from many of my colleagues, as a guy who's worked on the inpatient side and worked in the hospital setting, sometimes not only the best quality place to provide that care is in the home, but it's also one of the most cost-effective places. If we can do things as a company to help avoid our patients or our clients entering the hospital in the first place, it's better for the family, but it's also better from a cost perspective with the payers. And if they're discharged from the hospital after surgery, or if they've got a chronic illness and they go home, it's many times the best setting would be in the home in many cases. But if they end up not staying healthy and they're back in the hospital, that's not good for the patient, the family, and it's also from a cost perspective. Hospitals get penalized for that. There's all sorts of issues around it. So we believe that, you know, if there's a focus on outcomes and on quality, we can actually help lower the cost by keeping people out of the hospital, freeing up the hospital bed, and having them in a setting they want to be in the first place. So there's, I think, cost and savings implications far beyond what patients are paying for directly. I think in the bigger healthcare system that a lot can be done to really help people stay at home longer to really avoid that, you know, the high cost of keeping them in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that offering that full continuum is positioning Interim well? We saw that CMS proposed making non-skilled personal care services potentially a benefit under Medicare Advantage plans. So it seems to me like if I'm a Medicare Advantage payer and I can go to a company like Interim and that can, you know, provide that full post-acute aging in place type continuum and have some sort of insurance plan that covers all of that, that seems like maybe an appealing proposition, yeah?
We absolutely believe that. I think that, you know, again, if you look at the two different services, the private duty personal care and support side is more, you know, again, often focused more on the ADL side of helping families out, where the skilled side is nurses going in and providing nursing care, physical or occupational therapy. Those type of services are very different. And the fact that we have offices that provide both of those services, you don't want a nurse who needs to go in and do a dressing change or deal with much more of a clinical issue, getting tied up doing more other activities when they could be going and taking care of another patient. And the same applies to somebody who's going in and providing more assistance with cooking or cleaning. They don't have the training in the background to be able to do the other clinical work. So we have offices that provide both. So you're able to, have much more consistency in the care, better communication, better coordination. So we do think that that's going to be a real advantage. Mm-hmm. And again, that's a very difficult time for families when they get to the point where they have to think about hospice for a family member. And the fact that we have offices that provide that, it makes it, again, in a very difficult time, it makes it somewhat easier to transition that care from the skilled side over to the team working on hospice when you have those teams working within the same office.
Right.
Doesn't make it easier emotionally, but I think from a coordination of care, it's a little less complicated. So we do believe that that is a big advantage that we have by offering the continuum.
Are you thinking of, in terms of interim's growth, are you looking at adding more hospice?
Yeah, absolutely. We do feel that there is a strong need for that across the country. So that is one of a number of areas that we want to continue to see growth in. But I think our focus is not only on growth. I think we want to make sure that as the organization is growing and as our offices are growing, we want to make sure that our focus stays on being the employer of choice for getting the best caregivers and the provider of choice in their market, where we're the office you call when you get to that point where you have a difficult decision you need to make about a family member, whether it's getting them some help at home or it's trying to find out what you want to do in terms of hospice. So it's not about just growing the numbers. It's about finding opportunities to provide more services out in the community, but making sure the focus stays on we want to be the employer choice for our area, and we also want to be the provider of choice.
So we've already talked a lot about staffing, so I don't mean to sort of beat a dead horse there, but given that it is such a top priority, I guess I have two other questions related to that I'm curious about. One is, who are the biggest competitors that Interim is facing for workers? Is it maybe on the personal care side? Is it retail? Is it restaurants? Is it other healthcare? Or is it a mix depending on what market you're looking at?
Yes, yeah, so if you were to attend these national meetings or talk to a dozen other companies like ours across our industry, it's all the above. I think we compete with each other. So people that are in home care compete with other home care companies for caregivers. We compete with hospitals that have, especially on the nursing side, have opportunities for for staff maybe in a different setting of nursing in the hospital, but we're competing, for a limited number of nurses. On the caregiver side, there is, obviously at that particular level of training, they have opportunities to go into hospitality, work at restaurants, work in retail, and there's a broad number of options that they have. So that gets back into, again, this is a much longer conversation, but we are really working to train our owners on trying to find the right hiring criteria to attract the people that really want to be in the industry, as opposed to they're going to take a job in retail if they can get an extra $2 an hour. A lot of people, thousands of people across the country are attracted to home care because they have a personal reason that this is important to them, whether it's a family member or they really want to take care of people. And we want to find more of those folks, so it's not a matter of, we're going to lose them to something outside of home care and they're going to go to work for go to work in a mall, in their hometown, rather than come to work for us. Is we want to find the people that are really attracted to the industry. But I do think that we're competing with a lot of different segments, both inside and outside of healthcare, for the folks that we're trying to hire.
Mm-hmm. And something we're seeing on the senior living side, like the assisted living facilities, is that they're looking at technology that can sort of predict based on how applicants fill out online applications, whether they're likely to be a good fit for the company, whether there are specific roles at the company that they might be good fits for based on, I don't even understand it all, but essentially sort of artificial intelligence, predictive analytics type algorithms. Is that type of technology on the hiring side something that you think is either in home care now or that you're interested in?
I think for us, it's a combination of technology, but it's also really training our office work together to identify the hiring criteria. And, you know, the way I talked about this in the staffing industry is this is my opinion, there's really tier one and tier two hiring criteria. Tier one is when, you know, you post a position and people are looking at pay, they're looking at, you know, the hours that they would work, you know, the shift, that kind of thing, and they're looking at the location. That's kind of like tier one. And you're competing, you know, you could have that tier one, you could compete with retail, you could compete with other hospitals, other home care companies. Tier two is the harder criteria to get to. This is what really kind of narrows the pool is. The tier two criteria would be they're looking for a particular type of company to work for. They're looking for a particular area of healthcare, or they want to work, you know, at a place where they're rewarded for what they do, or they're really attracted to home care because of a personal commitment to it because of a family member. And we're trying to make sure that as we develop our, you know, our training, but also the technology can help with this a little bit, that we identify more and more people that have tier one and tier two hiring criteria that are really attracted to the business. We don't ever want to limit anybody's ability to apply or to come into our company, but we want to really try to attract more and more people that want to do this as a career. There's been a lot of talk in our industry about trying to create a career path for people that want to be in home care, and I'm fully supportive of that. I think it's an excellent idea because this is something that, you know, you want to see people that can work with a company and, you know, move up in their career and get more and more expertise in the area. So I think we need to, as an industry, really put a lot more attention on why this is a really great career to have.
Mm-hmm. And I shared with you that I spoke with Shelley Sun from Bright Star Care for the podcast recently, and she said that they're making, I think it was an $800,000 investment at the sort of corporate level to create caregiver education within Bright Star, so that if they have caregivers who are interested in, you know, becoming more educated, sort of moving up the career ladder within home care, Bright Star can kind of provide that kind of support for them and help with retention. So curious if there's anything similar that Interim is doing or thinking of doing, or investments that you're making in other areas on the staffing side.
Yeah, so that similar to what you just shared that Shelley's doing, we have a number of initiatives throughout the company that falls under the retention bucket. You know, the onboarding is more about, we think, training to get people committed to why this is going to be a great place to work. The retention side of it is really, you know, recognizing and rewarding caregivers for doing great work and providing them with ongoing training and ongoing career opportunities. So, you know, very, very similar. Some of the same things that it sounds like they're working on in their company, we're doing some of the same things here as well.
Great. So we've talked about staffing quite a bit and also the changing sort of payer landscape that is really a top priority for Interim right now, or anything else the company's doing that you think is interesting or innovative?
I would stress the fact that we really believe the, you know, the continuum is a big advantage that we have, and helping our owners find ways to, you know, increase their penetration across the entire continuum and offer more services in their community. I think, again, we touched on this earlier, the recruiting is so critical to what we do, but we're putting a lot of focus on, you know, being able to demonstrate high quality and strong outcomes in our offices as well.
And then in terms of industry challenges, what's keeping up at night? Is it really the staffing piece that is sort of overwhelming right now? I hear that from other providers.
I think that if I were to go out and talk to our owners, that would be the number one thing that they would share. And I would say from our perspective as well, that's at the top of the list.
And then in terms of the biggest opportunity, what are you excited about?
I don't think that this is necessarily something that'll happen in the next 12 months, but I do believe that there's going to be an increase in all of our home care companies finding ways to incorporate technology into their operations to be able to help care for our clients and our patients. Again, whether it's telemedicine, telemonitoring, that will never replace the work that we do directly with family members. But I think there is a role for that, you know, and that's yet to be determined how that'll be reimbursed or how that actually takes place. But many of us in the industry are looking into that.
So in terms of the technologies, are there specific ones that you think are most exciting or promising? And then on the flip side, are there any that you think maybe are overrated but that are getting a lot of buzz right now?
Yeah, it's a little tough for me to answer that other than just giving you my opinion. I think that our vision and, you know, working with our owners is we're trying to find ways to work together with technology companies to complement each other while at the same time not trying to replace the, you know, the critical role of having actual, you know, caregivers and nurses taking care of our patients and our clients. So I think that when you look at things like telemonitoring and being able to keep an eye on how patients are doing between visits, I think that that type of a service I think is going to be very important. We in no way are viewing technology as something that could replace the hands-on work that needs to take place when people are in the home. And the other side of technology I think that's very important to us is working with the right providers, and we're talking to many of these in the industry in terms of enabling our caregivers and our nurses to have better technology and better automation when they're in their home providing care for documentation purposes and, you know, just to help them do their jobs better. So that's kind of the way we look at it.
Great. So I have just a couple of questions that I've got here that sort of we haven't gotten worked into the conversation yet. So maybe I'll just pose them in sort of a non sequitur way. So in terms of Interim's growth, are there any revenue goals or goals in terms of new franchises to open this year or in the next few years?
I think, again, I would say that, yes, we definitely want to grow. We think that we want to be able to support our owners so that they can continue to grow organically in their markets. And, again, it's we believe that the path to that is being able to prove that you're the employer and provider of choice. So we kind of view that as critical to growth. So if we're, you know, we're getting great talent and we're training them well and we're providing great care, we think, you know, we'll be the office that will be on the list for people to call when they need help. So we do want there to be continued organic, you know, growth with our owners. We want them to you know, be able to grow and provide more services in their market. From an expansion perspective, you know, we see, you know, hospice is a nice opportunity for growth for many of our owners. And the fact that we provide the continuum allows for even our existing owners to be able to add service lines as they're growing in their market. But as a franchise company, you know, we do have a number of markets across the country that are still available, and we're actively talking to, you know, potential new owners about becoming a part of Interim. We have regular visits from potential new owners to our office. We had one this week. We've got a number of them planned in the very near future. So, you know, we're always looking for great new franchisees to join the Interim organization.
In terms of growing the hospice, I'm curious, do you think that if you've got a franchise location that is only providing, that isn't Medicare certified yet, that's only providing personal care, that hospice is a good step to get them in that Medicare world? Or do you think it's better to be Medicare certified on the home health side and be providing those services and then add hospice? Or is that not the right way to think about it at all in terms of the growth into that area?
Yeah, that's another one. I'll just answer that from an opinion perspective. So there, you would probably get different answers depending on who you speak
sure.
with. I think that our owners, you know, again, have an ability to, assuming that the state requirements allow them to, if they were able to expand into hospice in that market, you wouldn't have to have a Medicare certified agency to do that. I do think my opinion would be that does make it sometimes not only easier, but it's a better fit because you have patients in that mix of your business that, in some cases, the next step where they have to deal with their illness as they move into hospice. So it's not exclusive. It's not like you have to have a Medicare-certified agency. We have some franchisees who have come on board with us where they actually open a freestanding hospice in areas where we have that available. So that's an opportunity to become part of Interim where you may not even have another one of the pieces of the continuum. But that depends on market and on what the owners are actually able to provide in their market. But there is an option for some of our markets to provide freestanding hospice.
That's interesting. I guess I always think of hospice just as a Medicare benefit. But are you saying that there's sometimes a significant private pay hospice segment of the market, or are there other payer sources for that? Is it private insurance?
No, I think you're accurate with that. I'm just saying that you wouldn't necessarily have to have a Medicare certified business to also own a hospice within the Interim model. It's not a requirement. You could possibly have a freestanding hospice as a part of Interim, depending on the market and, you know, the franchise availability in that particular market. Ideally,
So,
you know, if you're running a Medicare certified, you know, that's a next logical step for some of our owners, though, to your point.
got it. So, but if you're not Medicare certified and you open a freestanding hospice, is that freestanding hospice then sort of, does that fall under Medicare certification, or is that just not, is that
No, no, no,
hospice
no.
care?
Without a doubt, if you open up a hospice, whether or not you have a Medicare certified interim location, you're going to be required to meet all the licensure and certifications of a normal hospice program. So you'd have to get that hospice program certified regardless
Okay, got it.
and licensed.
Sure. Okay. Just want to make sure I understood that. And so, but that's also, it sounds like if they're going to open a freestanding hospice, is that an inpatient hospice potentially?
No, it would be home-based.
It would be
It'd be a
home-based.
home-based
Okay.
hospital. Yeah.
Okay, got it. So it would be potentially a single owner, but the interim home care franchise is sort of a separate business from the hospice with different balance sheets and everything. Is that the sort of model?
In the majority of our offices, the owner in the market who does this, you know, the Medicare certified business, the next step in the continuum would be hospice. We have some markets, though, where
Okay.
potentially you could have a freestanding hospice independent of that. But it's very
Independent of
market
the, okay.
specific.
Right. Got it. And then any numbers you can share in terms of just when you're looking at the budgets, I think our listeners are always interested, and I don't know how much you can disclose, but are you putting X number of dollars over the next few years to staffing initiatives versus marketing, or are the spending patterns changing at all as you look at what's needed given the way that the industry is evolving?
Yeah, sure. So have to be a little careful about the revenue numbers again. Can give you just some general numbers, but over almost 340 offices across the country. We're in 44 states currently. We have approximately at any given time about 43,000 caregivers working for us. We're going to be approaching 40 hospice locations, and growing. And you know, I think from the franchisor perspective, from our corporate team, lots of work and support with our owners on the recruiting and retention piece. That is a real core focus, and then a lot of work around those other topics that I talked about, really trying to help them improve and demonstrate quality, improved outcomes, and learning to run their business from an optimal perspective. We have a Lean Six Sigma black belt on our corporate team, and we've done a Lean Six Sigma training for. We actually have over 100 of our staff and our owners that are white belt, a minimum of white belt certified in Lean Six Sigma. So we really do believe that there's a role for that. It's very common and very popular in a lot of other areas of healthcare, but really trying to learn best practices and how to operate in the most optimal way to be able to provide the best care that we can.
Right. And then on a personal note, just curious what you do for fun or how you blow off steam and sort of relieve some of the pressures of being a CEO.
Yeah, so you probably get this answer all the time, but I'm one of those work hard, play hard kind of people. So I put, you know, a lot of energy and passion into what I do, and I'm surrounded by a great group of people. And outside of work, I don't really chill much. I like competitive sports and have been involved in sports my whole life. But my passion now is more around endurance sports. So I'm a triathlete. You know, I like running. I ran in college, so I still like running road races and marathons when I'm not overcoming an injury, that is. But I'm very passionate about the endurance sports and things like triathlon. So that's definitely something I like doing outside of work, along with spending time with my family.
Do you have a favorite race or event that you like to do or have done in the past?
I mean, guess my favorite race and one of my more one of the accomplishments I'm more proud of is when I completed the Ironman, which was great. I really like the longer distance races, so I like doing marathon and the longer triathlons, those type of things. But hey, on the weekend or you know early in the morning when I'm not at work or in the evening, I love just getting out and training. It's a good release and a good way to kind of keep my balance. So.
All right. Well, that sounds, I am not a runner, but we have some here at Home Healthcare News. So I think I'm trying to understand what the appeal is.
It's awesome. Try it. Try it. You'll love it.
All right, I'll take your word for it. Well, it was fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me for the podcast.
Great. I really enjoyed it.